Welcome to Silicon Valley Business Connections, brought to you by the Silicon Valley Black Chamber of Commerce,
where diversity and opportunity are one.
From education to employment, entrepreneurship to innovation, this program is your weekly connection to the latest trends and opportunities taking place all across Silicon Valley. Host Carl Davis Jr. talks to the rock stars of Silicon Valley and offers you engaging interviews and insights from local, regional, and internationally acclaimed business leaders, entrepreneurs, and community leaders to help you stay connected. Now, here's your host, Carl Davis Jr.
Hi, I'm Carl Davis Jr. Welcome to Silicon Valley Business Connection. I'm your host, but I'm also the president of the Silicon Valley Black Chamber of Commerce, where we help all small businesses start, finance, grow, and even exit their businesses. The best way to reach us and find out what we do is to go to our website at blackchamber.com. That's blackchamber.com. My guest today is truly a good friend, and I say that every week, but this guy is truly a good friend of mine, and I respect him so much. I'm so thankful to have him on the show. Mr. Mike Beasley, I want to talk a little bit about your background, Mike.
My background.
You know, I heard you came from a school called Boise State. Tell me a little bit about Boise State.
No, it wasn't no Boise State. It's Weber State. Weber State University in Ogden, Utah.
See, that's why I got
confused. You didn't know they had brothers in Utah, did you?
When you left, that was it, right?
No, man. We had a few there. As a matter of fact, you take a look, Damian Lillard, for example, came from Weber State, okay?
Really?
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. So we have some brothers that can play some ball, you know, and one of the requirements of people like Damian, you know, I mean, one of the requirements of people my age is we have to go back and teach the young ones, you know, how to play ball. So, you know, don't tell anybody because we try to keep it quiet. But, you know, I had to go back and help them, school them, you know, on how to play.
Well,
that's
Mike,
one of the requirements of Weber State, you know?
Mike, you know, that was one of the ways that we met at IBM. You know, we both worked at IBM, and you and I got a chance to meet, and I guess it was actually through athletics, right?
Oh, absolutely. I remember the day I met you, 40 years ago. Lynn Jenkins brought you down to the gym. We had one more spot on the team. And Lynn says, I got this guy I want to bring. Okay, I said, well, okay, bring him on down. And he brings this guy down. And I look at this guy, and I look at these skinny legs he had, and I go, man, Lynn, who'd you bring here, man? And then you went out on the court, and I saw you jump, and I said, oh, He'll do.
Oh, Mike, that was the start of a wonderful relationship, and people didn't know it. But not only did we win the championship in basketball, but we actually played flag football, and then we won it in baseball, softball, right?
Yeah. We had a good run, man. We had a real good run.
Well, Mike, I mean, you had a really good career at IBM, and one of the things that I always was very impressed with was somehow, and you tell me the story of how that happened, Mike, that you started running software companies for IBM. But go into that background, if you would.
Yeah, well, this started after you know, I was a manager, you know, third, fourth line manager or something in IBM, and then I decided I wanted to go back to school. So I went back to MIT and got my master's in the management of technology. And after that, I got to work for the senior vice president of software, right? And so I got to explain to some people what I wanted to do. You know, I really wanted to do some things that IBM was not good at, you know. And IBM, you know, did huge projects extremely well, but some of the smaller things that needed to be done, we didn't do as well. And so I wanted to create a business underneath IBM, you know, an independent business running underneath IBM. An example would be IBM builds databases, right? Relational databases, hierarchical databases, but we didn't do any of the tools. And there's a lot of money in the tools and that sort of thing. So that's what I, you know, told people in the company that I wanted to do. And they took a chance on me, you know, and let me create this business. And, you know, it's, this business turned out to be extremely profitable. I mean, when I left, it was, you know, the business was a $850 million business. So over that nine year span. And we built, I mean, 1 year, our first really good year, we had several big deals. One, a $20 million deal, you know, cash deal. You know, we actually affected the IBM share earnings by 2 cents. And I still remember that because we sent a letter to the controller there saying, you know, and the subject of the letter was our 2 cents worth. Okay.
Wow. So, wow.
We didn't have over that 9 year stretch, we had a significant impact on IBM, and it worked well. Worked well.
Man, Mike, that's pretty
the story.
Impressive.
Call Icing Software.
Man, that's pretty impressive, Mike. You know, I know your heart, and lately you've been really involved in, you know, trying to bring whatever expertise and management skills you have to this whole homeless situation, Mike. And I know that's your heart, and I want you to talk a little bit about that. So frame it the way you want, Mike. I mean, a lot of people have said, and I don't know how the statistics are, that African Americans make up about 25% of the homeless. I don't know if that's true or not, Mike, but tell me how you frame that homeless sort of situation for our listeners.
Well, I'll start there since you just said that number. You know, we do a survey. We're required to do a survey. The counties, the states, you know, all the counties are required to do a survey the last 2 weeks of January, okay, on odd years. Okay, so 2019 would have been the last year. And so at that point in time, they call them point in time counts, as a matter of fact, 19% of the homeless people in Santa Clara County were African American.
Wow. Okay.
We represent in the county, I think, about 2% of right. the population, right? So you can see that's out of whack. So yeah. just to take that point because you mentioned it. But let me back up to something else. Earlier you had said, and I think a couple of days ago, I remember when you asked me to do this a couple of weeks mm-hmm. ago, you said, hey, I want you to talk about homelessness if you can, because you have a passion for the homeless. It was on my mind. I was thinking, you know, a passion, I looked up the definition. It says a strong and barely controllable emotion. and I said, you know, actually, I don't have a passion for this subject. What I have probably is an IOU. I mean, it's like people have helped me all my life. You know, where I got to because people helped me. You know, I got the best educations and all of these things, right? So mm-hmm. I've been fortunate. So I feel like there's an IOU out there. I owe somebody. I owe the community. I owe this humans, right? So a lot's been given to me. I need to give a lot back. So that's why I do this, Robert. It is nothing more than I owe. It's just like you walk up to someone, give them $100, and they go, whoa, why'd you give me this $100? I said, did you forget? I borrowed it from you a couple months ago. It's not a gift. I'm not giving a gift of my time and my effort. What I'm giving is something I owe because all the people that have given me.
So Mike.
That's why I do it, okay?
Man, that's powerful, Mike. That really is. I mean, that comes from your heart. And that $100, I think you do owe that to me, but we'll talk about that after the show. Okay.
I'm glad you reminded me.
Mike, you know, that's such a huge problem for so many people. How do you even conceptually put your arms around that problem? You know, how do you do that, and where do you begin?
Well, let me give you a few thoughts. You know, people parse this up and they'll talk to you about it in different ways. It depends on the person you talk to. So you're talking to mm-hmm. Mike Beasley. So here's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. I look at homelessness in three pieces, okay? Financial, financial homelessness. And then I look this other area is what I call a problem or dependency. You know, people have some type of problem, some type of dependency, you know, alcohol, drugs, whatever. And to some degree, sometimes it's even just, I just don't get along well with people. You know, I just don't get, I can't go to places like DMV and, you know, and do well, that sort of thing. They have problems. And then the third area is mental illness, mental health problems. Okay. So I look at it in those three different ways when I'm trying to talk to people about it and try to explain. You know, if you're working and you know, they say in San Jose, it takes three people on minimum wage, to get minimum wage, it takes three people to afford a one bedroom apartment.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, so that means the mama, dad, and the oldest child got to work, right? And guess what? If there's an oops on anybody, any of the three, you know, somebody gets sick, something else happens, break, you know, then you're homeless.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
You're homeless, Anita. And that's, that's problematic. So while we're on that, just this section of financial and the financial mm-hmm. homelessness, because that's mm-hmm. probably the easiest one for people to understand. But there's a, mm-hmm. there's a lot to you know, that I think people don't know, you know, in California, the whole state, mm-hmm. 32% of renters pay more than 50% of their salary for housing. And that's a third of the people are paying half of their salary for the rent.
And that, and so you paying that to rent, that's to keep a roof on your head. You ain't ate nothing. You ain't drove nothing. You ain't did anything else.
So, you know, I mean, think about that. That's a problem.
Yeah.
That is a problem. If you look in the Bay Area, it gets even worse, right? Mm-hmm. 45% of the renters are paying 50% of their salary.
Wow.
So it doesn't take much. It doesn't, you know, think about it. How many people in, if you're paying 50%, you're on the edge. You're on a thin edge there. It does not take much to fall off, right? I think the federal government, the statistics say you really should be around 30%. You shouldn't be any more than 30%. When we got, you know, a third of the population in California over 50% and almost half the population in Silicon Valley.
That's crazy, Mike. But, you know, we end up saying it and, you know, we say it in jest, but there's some truth behind it. You know, we look at each other and we say, hey, you know, we're only 3 months away from being homeless ourselves. You missed three payments. Right. You may be out.
Right. That's absolutely true. And unfortunately, this COVID environment is showing that.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it will get.
Do you feel, Mike, and Mike, before you go on, Mike, do you feel that the COVID environment is making more people homeless?
Yes. Yes. I mean, think about a person that has a job where that company had to close. Well, they were paying rent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can't pay the rent. You don't have a job. I mean, this is easy.
Yeah. Man.
It's going to be an impact. I think the only question is how big is the impact? I don't think there's any question about there is an impact. Mm-hmm. There's a big impact. You know, you could argue that the money that the government's trying to put into the system and pay people is helping,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they, you're going to, I don't think there's any doubt about seeing that.
Man, Mike. Well, you know what I want to do, Mike? I want to get ready to take a break because I want to take this up on the second half. You know, I love this, and we're going to dive into those other two that you're talking about, Mike. But this is very fascinating to get it from your perspective, someone that's, you know, in working with homeless folks, and I'll talk about whatever you're doing to help them. But let's take a break right now. We're going to leave it right there. You're listening to Silicon Valley Business Connection.
Bay Area residents, we need your help. The coronavirus has affected everyone, and that includes Silicon Valley. Nonprofits that help small businesses like our Silicon Valley Black Chamber of Commerce are in dire need of support. Your support helps us support and assist small businesses with workshop webinars and even one-on-one technical training for free. please give, whether it's your time, your volunteer expertise, or donations. Go to blackchamber.com. That's blackchamber.com and see how we help Bay Area communities.
And now back to Silicon Valley Business Connections.
Welcome back. You're listening to Silicon Valley Business Connections. I'm your host, Carl Davis Jr. My guest today is Mr. Mike Beasley, a very good friend of mine, but a gentleman who, as he said, he doesn't really have a passion for homeless, but he just feels like he's got an IOU to just dive in this homeless problem and just help people out. And Mike, I'm always amazed that, you know, Silicon Valley with all these brilliant folks we have, great problem solvers, how come we can't solve this homeless problem, Mike? What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, it's big. It's really about, you know, if I would say the most difficult piece is probably management. You know, it's a huge thing to manage across multiple cities, counties, states. You know, it is huge. And it's got so many elements, as we were talking. You remember I told you, mm-hmm. I broke this into financial, and we didn't get into the people that have some type of drug or
dependencies,
you know, alcohol, some kind of dependency. And then you got the mental health piece, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked about the easy part, the financial part. Mm-hmm. And the easy part is really hard because think about it. You gotta build a lot of units to house the people that we have here in this state, especially mm-hmm. when you talk about affordable units. We just don't have enough units. Okay, supply and demand has driven up the price. This is an expensive area. That's tough. But now you get into, let's say, the second area where people have some type of dependency. Well, you not only have to find them a unit, you have to do some type of supportive housing to, you know, to fix the problem, right? Mm-hmm. And we look at this thing called housing first, which says get mm-hmm. people into a house and then solve their problems, right? Because mm-hmm. it's hard to solve those problems and work on those problems when they stand under a bridge. So,
yeah,
you know. And you got, like I said, you got the range of problems are just, you know, drug, alcohol, and then they're just plain problems dealing with society, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people have problems going to the DMV or the Social Security office and being successful. And if you've mm-hmm. been to either one of those places, you know how tough it is. You got to find the right guy, the instructions right, and then you get up in the window and they tell you, no, you know, that last hour you've been waiting, you're in the wrong line. Over this other line. You know, some people lose it, you know, and they won't let them back in, right? Fortunately for me, I get that close to losing it, like, at least go back. But I can see people that have difficulties, you know, not making it. So that's in that category also.
But before you go, before you go on, Mike, I would like to ask you this, because some people have heard the first part of our show and they're hearing it now, and they want to connect with you, Mike. And I want to say this early so we could talk about it toward the end of the show. How could people who hear you and say, you know, I want to work and help Mike with this problem, how could they get to you?
They can email me at mike@gilroycompassioncenter.org.
Can you say that again? Mike?
mike@gilroycompassioncenter.org.
Okay. Well, Mike, I didn't want to interrupt you. I want you to go back to what you're talking about, because I think the way you had laid it out, is that the way other people see it too, Mike, or you've been able to put those categories together? And when you talk to people, because it resonates with me, it seems very straightforward.
Well, you know, you've known me for a long time. I mean, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people that break it out in different ways and stuff. Mm-hmm. I have to break it out in a real simple way because I don't really understand complex things. So that's mm-hmm. this is the way I break it out. It's simple. I can get it. Okay.
Yeah, that's why you were a programmer. Ones and zeros. Ones and zeros. See, on and off.
That. You say, what number is it? Zero, one. I can deal with that. It's my favorite numbering system, by the way. Okay. So let me talk about the third category, mm-hmm. mental health, mental illness, that sort of thing, right? And that is really a tough one, you know. And as a matter of fact, I mean, one could argue that is not a homeless problem, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. in the way you could test it is if I give a mentally ill person three houses, have I solved their problem? And the answer is probably not, right? No. So, but we put it in that category of homelessness. So, and that's a tough one to deal with.
I mean, I can see why people put it there because, you know, if someone is homeless, they're homeless, right? You know, if a mental ill person is homeless, they're homeless. If you're whatever, if you don't have a home, you're homeless, right?
And, you know, and this thing started, a lot of people like to call it when Reagan opened the doors of Agnew, whatever, you know, just let the homeless people out, I mean, mentally ill people out. It really was a 1967 law called LPS, and the LPS is the first letter of the last name of the, I know Pat is short of the last two names of the bill that was written. And essentially what that bill says, I'm going to oversimplify, but if you want to go read it, you know, just do the 1967 LPS California law. But the simplicity of it is, before that law, if somebody, if we thought somebody was mentally ill, we could put them in a state hospital. With that, this new law, you have to show that I am a danger to you or to me. So a danger to someone else or a danger to myself. And you have to prove that, okay, in order to get me into a state hospital.
That sounds crazy in itself, Mike. How are you going to prove it unless somebody has to do something to hurt somebody?
Well, no, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. You have to show that this person, you know, is mentally ill and can't take care of themselves. And see, the difference is, I mean, you shouldn't be, I happen to agree with the law, you know, and I may be in the minority on this, but I agree that for me, and I'm just talking about me, let's say that I'm mentally ill and you can look at me and see that I'm mentally ill and say, Mike needs some help. Let's get him into the hospital, right? Well, the way the law is, which again, which I said I believe in, is if I'm not a harm to you and I'm not a harm to myself, then you got to let me go and do my thing. Mm-hmm. But you can look at me and say, Mike's not going to do well. Well, that's okay. I choose not to do well in that case, right? I choose to be on my own. Maybe somebody's told me about this medication I can take, but this medication makes me feel like somebody else. And I don't want to take. Well, the law protects me on that and says I don't have to. Okay, I don't have to be mentally well. I just have to not be a danger to you or me, right? And that makes it tougher for people like me to deal with people. But I think it's the right thing, okay? I think we need to, you know, again, this is an area I don't know enough about, but it's an area we need to do better. For example, we need to have more people that deal with mental illness and understand how to deal with mentally ill people and people on that edge. We need more of them in the police department. So when I call from the Compassion Center and somebody's doing something really strange or whatever, they don't come with the guns and stuff, you know, they don't come ready to arrest the person. They come with knowledge of how to deal with the person. I think we got to do better there on the mental illness piece. We got to know more and manage it better. So I think that will change. I think people are getting more enlightened and they're going to be more police departments are going to have people that deal with that, not some rookie police officer or whatever, you know, with a gun on coming to deal with that person. So that's just my opinion. So
that's very important, Mike, because that's an issue. That's a hot button today is, you know, police training, right? Police diagnosing a situation and applying the right type of authority to the situation, obviously with George Floyd and other things, you've seen people do some things that kill people versus being able to recognize what needs to happen in this situation.
Right. And I think you would find, you know, I haven't asked this question of a police officer, but I believe you will find police officers, the majority will say, I'm not qualified to deal with mentally ill people.
Right.
You know,
right.
I know I'm not, you know, and I deal with a number of people. Right.
Right.
But I know I'm not qualified. I don't have the that knowledge and capability to understand their problem and and to work with them, and unique professionals, people that understand that,
Let me ask you this, Mike, because we only got like a couple minutes left. Tell me a little bit about your work at Compassion. So tell me a little bit about the Gilroy Compassion Center. Tell me something about that.
Well, the Compassion Center, again, the way I look at things, we deal with problems. When you deal with a problem, you're dealing with either the symptoms or the problem, right? When we first started, we were dealing with just the symptoms. As of last year, we're now dealing with more of the problems, trying to solve the problem. So when we deal with the symptoms, we have a day center. And people that are homeless can come into that day center, and they come in, and one of the things they can do is they can wash their clothes. They could get a shower. They could get a little something to eat or something, okay? We talked with homeless people before we opened it up, and one of the things that they said they needed is, they need an address. Can you remember? You won't believe how many forms you can't successfully fill out without an address, right?
Wow.
You don't know that until you become homeless.
Right.
So we do those sort of things. But here's the thing, though. We help them out, and we make their day better, make their life better that day. But when the sun rises the next morning, we got the same problem.
Same problem.
Same thing,
Yeah.
Same. You got to go through it again. So you're just dealing with the symptoms, making their lives a little better. And that's what we have been doing for some period of time. Now we've moved on, and we're still doing that, but now we're looking at more of how do we get South County to deal with the housing, the affordable housing, piece of this.
They can reach you at mike@gilroycompassioncenter.org, right?
That is correct. Or they can call me on my phone at 779-MIKE.
Hey, Mike, but what was the area code?
408.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we thank my wonderful guest, Mr. Mike Beasley, being on our show today. And as I always tell you, stay connected. You're listening to Silicon Valley Business Connections.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Business Connections with Carl Davis Jr. and brought to you by the Silicon Valley Black Chamber of Commerce. More information about today's show is available by going to the Chamber's website, blackchamber.com. That's blackchamber.com. Or call 408-288-8806. That's 408-288-8806. Copies of our podcast are available online at blackchamber.com. If you would like to know more about a specific guest or make recommendations for upcoming guests and topics, email info@blackchamber.com. Keeping you connected, Silicon Valley Business Connections.